At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Omar Al-Khatib, Director, Corporate Affairs and Investor Relations. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, and thank you for joining us on our conference call. On the line with us today, we have Murad Al-Khatib, President and CEO of Alliance Grain Traders, Lori Ireland, our Chief Financial Officer, and Gaytan Barasa, our Chief Operating Officer. Before we get started, I would like to remind everyone that today's call may include forward-looking statements. Such forward-looking statements are given as of the date of this call and involve certain risks and uncertainties. A number of factors and assumptions are applied in the formulation of such statements, and actual results could differ materially. This call may also include references to certain non-IFRS financial measures. For additional information with respect to forward-looking statements, factors and assumptions, as well as a reconciliation to IFRS measures, we direct you to our news release, our website, as well as our recent filings on SEDAR. With that, I'll turn things over to Murad for some comments, and then we'll go to questions. Murad?
Thank you, Omar, and thank you, everyone, on the call today. The global economy has been quite challenging in 2011. Eurozone debt, threat of sovereign defaults, volatile currency, credit liquidity, and questions around the world, where the global economy is now, where it's heading, have been the main topics of conversation in business circles. Commodity-based businesses have been affected dramatically, and the agribusiness sector has seen this impact. Following some of the 2010 weather and production-related issues, we had an optimistic start to 2011 with some signs of market recovery. The global economic headwinds have become a significant factor in our business, translating into lower export volumes in the past few months. These global economic conditions continue to be a source of uncertainty, driving volatility in commodity prices and agricultural commodity shipment volumes, creating what we at AGT view as short-term liquidity issues for importers around the world. While agricultural supply and demand fundamentals have appeared to be relatively immune to short-term macroeconomic events, this uncertainty has contributed to importers significantly lowering their buying activities, leaving local market stocks to remain in the low or relatively depleted state. Hand-to-mouth buying, replenishing only minimum amounts of stock, has resulted in significantly lower shipments in a period where we typically see some of our highest volumes. Obviously, this has affected our ability to execute our sales strategy in the past period. However, we have the view that these developments are short-term, a view supported by management's view that the demand profile for pulses and staple foods is relatively inelastic with a few true substitutes. The market must come back to normalize purchasing soon. They cannot hold off indefinitely because people in these markets must consume the vegetable proteins and nutrition that pulses and staple foods provide. The 2011 year would be categorized as among the most difficult the global pulse industry has ever faced, with political unrest from Arab Spring, Europe's debt crisis, currency devaluations, and emerging markets liquidity, each compounding the effects of the other, creating a perfect storm to affect our normal operations. Even in these difficult conditions, we've been able to report sales of $760 million, EBITDA of $47.6 million, and adjusted net earnings of $22.5 million for the full year. With these difficult conditions in this quarter, we reported sales of $231.5 million, EBITDA of $9.2 million, and adjusted net earnings of $874,000. Our complete fourth quarter and year-end results are available on SEDAR or from our website at www.alliancegrain.com. Before I get back to my comments, I'd like to ask Lori Ireland, our CFO, to provide a summary of the quarter and our financial statements. Lori?
Thanks, Murad. I'm going to speak to a couple of significant items in the financial statements. Page 30 of the MD&A outlines selected assets and liability information, as well as a calculation of net debt. Net debt has increased from $223 million at September to $264.8 million at December, and it has more than doubled when compared to December 31, 2010, which was at $117.7 million. The most significant reasons for the increases are inventory increased by $73 million when comparing December 2011 to December 2010, and by $7.3 million when comparing to September 2011. This is due to larger stock positions internationally that reflect AGT's move to more of a distribution and warehousing platform. It is important to note that the range of product offerings has also expanded in scope. Management estimates that there are over 50 different products, grades, and origins contained within our diversified inventory book. Also, we note that accounts receivable increased by $36.6 million when comparing December 2011 to December 2010, and by $14.6 million when comparing to September 2011. Sales revenue increased when comparing December 2011 to December 2010 and to September 2011, which contributes partially to the increase in accounts receivable. In addition, we saw longer payment cycles from many of our customers who were experiencing cash flow issues because of reduced credit availability with their lenders. We note again that the receivable position, while large in dollar value, is diversified through our sales program in over 100 countries and through our low concentration risks with any one buyer. Also, we continue to employ risk management techniques like utilization of accounts receivable insurance through EDC and private insurers, therefore trading buyer risk for export credit agency risk. Term debt also increased since we used our FCC $70 million facility to fund acquisitions and capital improvements throughout the year. We saw our accumulated other comprehensive loss increase once again. This number is calculated by valuing AGT's net investments at the year-end rate and comparing that to the net investment at the purchase date. Since many of the currencies devalued between the investment date and December 31, 2011, a loss was booked into other comprehensive loss on the statement of financial position and on the statement of comprehensive income. Of significance to note is that the Turkish lira has devalued by just over 25% from September 15, 2009, the date that we acquired Arbel, between that date and December 31, 2011. The lira has since come back slightly since year-end. I want to remind investors that investments in non-Canadian dollar-denominated foreign subsidiaries are revalued each quarter-end, and the respective gains or losses are booked at those periods. You will also see a line on the Statement of Comprehensive Income called Unrealized Foreign Exchange Loss. This amount is a non-cash item and relates again to the devaluation of currencies and the effect of the devaluation on foreign-denominated financial instruments, such as accounts receivable, accounts payable, loans, and derivative contracts. Again, if the currency strengthens, this amount will either be smaller or could be a gain, as we have seen in the past quarters. AGT believes that this is a non-cash snapshot entry, and whether it's a gain or loss, it should be excluded from adjusted earnings and from EBITDA calculations. Also, we're in the process of undergoing a few initiatives that we think will improve our profitability and our earnings per share. First, as mentioned in the MD&A, AGT, through its subsidiary, Alliance Pulse Processors, has extended the $130 million operating credit with the banking syndicate of Scotiabank, HSBC, and Rabobank. The line expires April of 2013, and there is a further one-year term out period to April 2014. We are pleased that the banks continue to show confidence in AGT and its management during times when others are struggling for financing. AGT continues to investigate global credit facilities, and it's anticipated that utilization of AGT's balance sheet strength will lower our global cost of capital, in particular in our emerging markets operations. Management estimates that this may lead to interest savings. We are also investigating the implementation of our Export Development Canada accounts receivable policy globally, which will mean streamlined reporting as well as allowing us premium savings. This additional securitization of our receivable base will also contribute to lowering our global cost of capital. We have engaged an accounting firm to assist us in international planning to ensure that we have a structure in place that is tax effective for AGT. Also, we are reviewing and updating our global information technology platform. Our goal is to have international metrics available at a glance at head office. This will help us to make better decisions across our global entity. Financial reporting has been integrated, and now our focus is on management information. Finally, our corporate infrastructure has been strengthened. We have added three individuals to the finance function. Our financial reporting continues to evolve. We have fully transitioned to IFRS with a clean audit opinion. We have tested our global internal controls across our subsidiaries, and we feel we are well positioned for growth.
Thank you, Lori. In the early part of 2011, we were optimistic about the normalization of our business. I would really like to be clear, we still feel this way. The timing on the normalization has been pushed back with recent developments in the global economy. These are short-term issues that we feel will resolve themselves. Because of the fact that the products offered by AGT are staple consumption items, need-to-haves, not nice-to-haves, we expect the duration and magnitude of the slower buying activities caused by the global economic conditions will be minimized. As this story unfolds in 2012-2013, I believe this will become increasingly clear. And it is in tighter, difficult business environments that you must be most mindful about issues and events out of your control that can affect your business. We learned from 2008, when the global credit was again tightened due to the start of the global economic downturn, we took steps to strengthen our risk management program to ensure we were well positioned for trouble in the future. In the exporting business, strength and sustainable competitive advantage come from knowing your business, managing your risks. The difficult conditions in late 2011 manifested themselves in a variety of ways. For example, it had been reported by some analysts that customer defaults in some markets had dramatically affected our business. There was worry of concentration risks in the Middle East and the effects of international sanctions on countries in this region. In reality, we had many problems due to the international economic environment, but I can say that the problems were not concentrated in any one country or region. Defaults have affected us and some of our customers exporting to what would be considered ancillary markets for our company. It certainly had an earnings impact, and it had a margin impact for AGT. However, by diversifying your customer base, working with only the best agents and distributors in each region, and ensuring that appropriate measures are in place, such as export insurance covering your receivables, you manage through it. I define the strength of our management team by the fact that we have managed through the 2008 to 2011 period, not normal by any means in the global economic and supply conditions for the pulse sector. By defining and controlling the terms of sale, as we do through our risk management program, we're able to reduce our exposure to problem markets as much as possible and wait for the turnaround when it is advantageous to re-enter and get active again. We cannot enter and exit markets based on short-term market effects. We are building a business for the long term. Maintaining a strong balance sheet, access to global credit are important considerations as well. The fact that we may pay our producers very quickly, in most cases retain ownership of cargo until it reaches ports when we are paid, means our cash cycles are long. As our business grows, so does the working capital needs, as demonstrated by the global credit facility we extended and announced on March 22nd. A syndicate of global lenders of Scotiabank, HSBC, and Rabobank have reaffirmed their belief in our business and in our strategy on very competitive terms. We will continue to use this strength of AGT to examine new credit facilities in 2012 to refinance our business in Turkey, Russia, Ukraine, South Africa, and China. We expect this to have the effect, as Lori mentioned, of lowering our global cost of borrowing and creating a sustainable competitive advantage for our business over the tight liquidity of many of our undercapitalized competitors. Looking forward, it's also important to understand the dynamics that will, in future periods, allow AGT to resume more normalized business. The first dynamic is crop supply. There have been rumors going around on this topic. Let me be clear in stating, we do not foresee supply problems from the origins where our facilities and assets are located. Production in Canada has been down last year. It's estimated again that acreage will contract in 2012. But the carryover brings that number to record levels still. Additionally, strong crop production in Australia and increase in seeding expectations in the U.S. are expected to assist in offsetting the Canadian decreases. I want you to remember, AGT is not a grain handler. We need adequate supply, not ample supply, in all of our origins. Origination strength and locations of our global assets are a key part of our strategy. We continue to prove ourselves as a key partner to farmers in every geography in which we operate. In 2012, management estimates that Turkey and India may produce smaller quantities of pulses overall. As we have said in the past, lower production in these regions creates opportunities for AGT to ship raw material from our facilities in Canada, the U.S., and Australia for import, reprocess, and re-export activities. Turkey is a key regional asset base for AGT and will continue to look at India as an important entry point in the coming periods. AGT will continue its efforts to increase our global capacity utilization. Utilization in non-peak periods achieved by product diversification in chickpeas, beans, flax seeds, peas, and canary seed may contribute to smooth earnings. Regarding acquisitions and expansions, we continue to keep our eyes on tuck-in acquisitions that benefit our strategy or fit with the overall program we have initiated. Our balance sheet on the long-term debt side is very strong. We have the debt capacity to finance these transactions without issuing equity. Our pasta plant in Regina, planned for construction to start later this year, and the Pulses food ingredient plant in Minot, North Dakota, are key projects that will add scale and size to our food ingredients and packaged food strategy that we're running out of our Arbel group today. North America and Western Europe are markets that hold tremendous potential for our products as the consumer demands natural products made from grains and pulses. Specifically on the pulses side of our business, gluten-free, non-GMO proteins, fibers, and starches are key growth areas for our company as we commercialize these new facilities. In the past few years, particularly through the period of transformation and rapid growth we have experienced since the Arbel acquisition of 2009, we have not seen normalized conditions in the markets or for our business. We have not had a chance to demonstrate the value and benefit that our global growth strategy will provide. We're optimistic that these normalized conditions are possible in the near term, and should they be realized, we can again begin to capitalize on the opportunities and show what I believe will be the immense benefit from the global footprint that we have created. In conclusion, AGT is a long-term focused business. Our management group is very committed to the long-term vision of this company. And as major shareholders ourselves, we stand shoulder to shoulder with all of our shareholders. We have a deep understanding of our business. We're deeply involved in the day-to-day operations and long-term planning and direction of this company. We have management depth, and we are working every day to strengthen our business and further our goals as a strong global food company. I'm confident we have better days ahead for AGT and that we are indeed on a path of creating long-term value for our shareholders. I think with that, we'll go to questions, Omar.
Operator, I think we'll open the lines up to questions now.
Certainly, sir. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touch-tone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing any keys. In order to accommodate as many callers as possible, one question from each person will be taken. To ask a supplemental question, please press star 1 again to rejoin the question queue. If time does not allow for response to all of the questions, the Alliance Grain Traders Investor Relations Group will follow up after the call. Anyone who has a question may press star and 1 at this time. The first question today comes from Robert Winslow of National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning, Robert.
Murad, could you remind us, please, are there any covenants, debt covenants, that are tied to either trailing EBITDA or trailing income or anything related to the income statement?
Yeah, I mean, the answer to that question, Robert, is that, you know, there's a couple of things. On all of the Arbel Group facilities, we have short-term credit facilities that are unsecured, and so there are no covenant-related conditions of those credits, so we can knock that off right away. Same with our United Kingdom and South Africa credits. The syndicated facility with Scotiabank, which is actually at the level of Alliance Pulse Processors, which is our operating company based in Canada, which holds the assets of Canada, the U.S., and Australia. In that particular facility and the farm credit facility, the great majority of our covenants are all balance sheet covenants. So we would have a current ratio covenant. We would have a minimum tangible equity covenant. And we have a total debt to tangible equity covenant. The only earnings or EBITDA related covenant is in the Farm Credit Canada facility. We have a EBITDA over basically a debt service coverage ratio, which, you know, I can tell you that even at the current level of earnings, when we just look at our interest and our principal repayments on our debt, we have a very significant comfort that covenant is very manageable. So no covenant issues. And, you know, I think it's important to note that, you know, we had a lot of comments from institutions that, you know, there was fear that with the lag in our earnings, that there was going to be some sort of a big issue on bank financing and covenants. In fact, even, you know, people suggesting that perhaps the credit facility that we had expiring the end of April wouldn't be renewed. And so we announced that renewal with the extension to 2013 April. And then I think it's important to note that that facility has a plus 1 year term out provision at our option, so that we end up in a position where we are committed out to April of 2014, you know, giving us a bit more comfort. So, you know, the covenant package is manageable, and we don't anticipate to see any issues with that.
So, how big is that Farm Credit Canada facility, Murad?
It's a $70 million facility.
And
it's been in place. We had a $50 million facility. We augmented it up to $70. And Robert, we are looking at, as we mentioned in a number of our disclosures, as you guys read through it, we mentioned, even in my comments, I mentioned that, you know, we will be looking at the augmentation of our long-term debt facilities and our overall global packages to take the strength of the Canadian balance sheet to lower our cost of borrowing in the emerging markets, and to ensure we have the long-term debt financing to complete the PASTA project and the other projects that are in our current queue.
That's helpful. I just want to follow up on this Farm Credit Canada. What you say, there's plenty of buffer on that today. Can you disclose for us what the covenant is and where you stand on that metric today? Or is that something you want to or you can get back to me if you don't have it now.
I mean, there's lots of room, Robert. I'll get the actual calculation and.
It's based on our EBITDA number.
So go ahead, Laurie. What's the covenant? It's 125. So,
yeah, our covenant is 125.
Our covenant is 125, and we're testing today at 5.52, Robert. We're five times above the covenant today, Robert.
Perfect.
So we have lots of room.
Yeah, I think that's pretty manageable.
The next question comes from Mark Robinson of Cormark Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Working through the numbers here, it looks like the PASTA sales were down about 11% in the quarter, but the fifth line, the production line, there's some language that says that it has come online, and there's also some discussion around higher inventories as a result of PASTA. So, can you provide some color on what exactly is happening in that market?
Yeah, Mark, there's a couple of issues. One is the fifth line is on stream. We're running about, I think we're running around a third or so utilization on that line. As a result of a semolina capacity issue. And so, you know, when we look at the overall utilization of that line in 2012, you know, we didn't have enough semolina to put the line into full capacity. And when you have five lines running, you can pick and choose which lines you're using. And so, you know, we started the semolina construction back in September with an anticipated February completion. That will be completed. In fact, I think they're in commissioning and testing now. So we'll get that up to a full utilization target by the end of 2012. In terms of a reduction in sales, part of that is due to a reduction in durum wheat prices as a result of the devaluation of the Turkish lira. So our sales figure is down. Tonnages were actually up in the quarter, not down. And when we look at inventory levels, we actually have a nice quarter one seasonal demand usually. And so we had some inventory built up to be able to ship in January, February on some large, you know, international orders.
Okay. This is a very quick B part, if you don't mind. The one-time expense you talk about in your EBITDA calculation, can you just give some color on what that is?
Yeah, some of it is, of course, acquisition-related costs. You're talking about the non-recurring costs?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's acquisition-related costs, and then there's so those are not capitalized any longer under IFRS. They flow right through to income. And so as a result, we back out the non-recurring acquisition costs. And then we had some one-time, regulatory, tax-related payments that were you know, for tax compliance and some of our foreign operations that were added back.
And there was also some one-time finance costs.
Yeah, related to the credit facility. Yeah, so the credit facility setup fees were also in that figure.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Christine Healy of Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Murad, I just wanted a little bit more clarity just on the grain shipment defaults that you were talking about in your comments. Can you just quantify for investors what EBITDA impact this had? And let us know, did this continue to be an issue in January and as you went through Q1?
Yeah, I'll start off to give you a bit of color. I mean, listen, you know, as I said in my comments, I think that, you know, the important thing to note is that this was not an incident related to, you know, one country or one region. I mean, we had a, you know, global economic condition. You know, I characterize the European banking liquidity crisis and the debt crisis as having far more significant reaching implications than the U.S. Problem of 2008, because the European banks have that much more, you know, tie to the emerging markets banks. I mean, if we look at, you know, the French banks in North Africa, you know, the Portuguese banks in East Africa, you look at the European banks activity in Singapore, which really flows through to the Indian subcontinent. So you have, you know, the large international players like SocGen and BNP and others, you know, who through their own credit liquidity issues, you know, we saw a significant contraction in emerging markets credit availability. So as a result of that, I mean, we had, you know, bad-intentioned importers and good-intentioned importers that just had liquidity issues that we had to deal with. So, you know, when I look at quantification of the, you know, effects, you know, at global audit time, of course, we go through our receivables and all of that and make sure that we provision, you know, anything into our financial results that will affect us in the next quarter. So when I look at a quantification, I would say it would be management's best estimate that it would be somewhere in the range of about $3 to $5 million of effect.
Okay, and did
when I look at you know, whether or not it will you know, reoccur, you know, I think that you know, we have seen some improvement in quarter one. Maybe I'll just ask Gaetan to give a quick comment on that as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've worked through some of these issues in the markets and have things, I guess, balanced in our distribution systems. Yeah, so I guess looking forward, don't see any more issues on this.
I mean, I think, Christine, there's no doubt that, you know, when we look at, you know, quarter one forward, we're being very clear to say that we think we have temporary issues that are going to resolve themselves as we go forward. But liquidity pressure, you know, has an effect of constraining margins because we do have, you know, basically hand-to-mouth buying, and we have to push product into markets to ensure that we end up in a position that we're able to drive our assets. And, you know, the other side of it is product mix changes very dramatically. You know, we end up, if we look at our quarter four sales, you know, we have went into, again, the places that we don't want to be long-term in terms of the commodity business, you know, increased shipments of peas, flaxseed. You know, these things are important fillers for capacity utilization. We don't want them to be the main driver of our assets because we are a value-added processing company that focuses on higher-end markets of 100 countries around the world. And if you look at our segmented reporting and our disclosure, you know, the sales tell the story from the year. You know, if I look at, you know, the overall picture of sales for the year, you know, we look at, you know, Canada or the Americas in general, you know, are up about, you know, 15%. The Asia Pacific Rim, which includes the Indian subcontinent, down about 35 or 38% year over year. We look at Europe, Middle East, and North Africa up significantly. So you can see that, you know, the breadth of our distribution has allowed us to manage through some of these issues. But when we're pushing product into the Middle East, North Africa region, just to keep our assets busy and to deliver some earnings, we constrain our margins a bit. So India and the Med region in general need to be balanced out a bit more, and I think we're going to see that in the second half of 2012.
So just Gaytan, just to be clear here, I think what some investors want to know is some of these containers that were refused at port. I'm thinking you guys are a large enough company that you wouldn't have needed to liquidate the product in the market, and that you would have just held on to the containers until you could sell them again. Can you just clarify that?
Yeah, there'd be a combination of moving some product to warehouse. We would work with our credit insurer EDC on outright defaults, and some markets we would resell the product, and the loss is mitigated with the insurance, of course. So yeah, you're right. We do have holding power.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a very key thing. I mean, the financing working capital strength of the company and our market depth, and remember the what we call solidification in our destination markets, we're not held hostage by defaulters of the world. We deal with our problems, we can take cargo into our warehouses, and we can, wait for the markets to go from panic and distress to improvement. And if you look at that, the November-December period was panic and distress as a result of significant currency devaluations. The Indian rupee went from 49 to 55. The Turkish lira went from 170 to 195. And that's just an indicator of all the emerging markets' currencies. We saw a recovery back in mid-January. And as a result, markets improved back in Jan-Feb. So the staying power was the right strategy.
Okay, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
The next question comes from Anup Prahar of GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Now, in 2011, you guys consumed just over $95 million in working capital. And as you made clear in your comments earlier on, you are a much bigger company now. So I guess what I'm trying to understand is, what's a realistic assumption with respect to how much of that $95 million you're going to be able to release going forward?
Yeah, I mean, very, very good question. I mean, Anup, all I could give you is an estimate and a target. And when we look at, the overall working capital requirements, it's affected by, as I said, the lengthening of that cash cycle, where when we look at it, emerging markets liquidity means that our customers, instead of paying 15 days prior to vessel arrival, they're paying at vessel arrival or at 5 days prior. So, we're seeing about a estimate of about a 10-day lengthening of our cash cycle. So when we look at that and an initiative that we've put in place across, global subsidiaries to move to even more of a just-in-time inventory position, and I'm expecting that we should be able to, realistically recover about half of that increase in 2012, which is our target internally. So I think that we're going to see an improvement of the cash cycle as we go forward, a bit more optimization on our working capital. And it's just even little things like, their improvement in their liquidity means that we can go back to, dictating terms instead of being a term taker. And part of this, Anup, is you have to be there for your long-term distribution, when they're having short-term issues. Because remember, we've said very clearly in the past, this strategy is what we call a value chain margin capture strategy. And every link of that value chain has to be healthy and has to be able to make its money to be able to have a healthy distribution. Our slogan is from producer to the world. So in that particular link of from us to distribution, we needed to stand behind our distribution that was attempting to be healthy, and we did that. At the same time, when things start turning around, we start to push back and make sure that they're not affecting our bottom line as well.
In your earlier comments, I think you said that you've got 50 different product categories now. So, I mean, do you really need 50 different product categories? Because if you do, I have a hard time understanding how you're going to release half your working capital.
I think that we can. I think that still ultimately we have 50 different product categories, but we still have large product categories, which are our core business items like red lentils, fava beans, desi chickpeas, green lentils, and white beans is another good example. So, we'll look at the possibility of doing that. The key in releasing our working capital isn't as much inventory. It's much more the receivable side.
Okay.
And so we'll be focusing a lot more on tighter credit terms, optimization of discounting facilities on letters of credit, and turning our cash quicker.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Max Ishnikov of Octagon Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Mark, can you give us a little bit more details, perhaps, on the performance or impact year to date from your previous acquisitions, like Cairns Commodities and North Dakota?
Well, I mean, at this point, I would say, you know, the Cairns Commodity acquisition in South Australia, you know, we acquired it in August. You know, it really, the crop came in November, December. And so as a result, you saw very limited impact of that asset on our 2011 results. But I can tell you that, you know, management estimates that the impact of this acquisition, I mean, the Australian business in general, Max, is becoming a very important balancing force in terms of both origination and earnings. And we expect that in the next, you know, 24 months or so to be a very significant contributor and a balance to the Canadian and Turkish businesses. So, you know, I really like the diversification that the New South Wales acquisition has given us to make us a major international shipper of all types of chickpeas. We were already a very significant player in kabuli type or the chickpeas for hummus and canning and direct consumption, but the desi or black chickpea, which is a big consumption item in the Indian subcontinent, we weren't even a player in that. Today, we'd be, you know, top three potentially on the export side in Australia. So, you know, I like that diversification into fava beans, chickpeas, lupins, and you know, other products that are grown, mung beans that are grown in the New South Wales region. On the Minot North Dakota acquisition, mm-hmm. we're under construction. So there's been no contribution. That asset is targeted to be fully completed by, you know, around October, November of this year. In fact, we hope to be, you know, doing some limited business at the start of new crop. That's going to be an interesting, you know, facility for us because it will produce the full range of pulses, flours, proteins, fibers, and starches for the food industry, for the high-value pet food industry, focused on North America, Western Europe, and Asian markets.
Mm-hmm. So everything's on schedule in North Dakota, right? No delays and
I mean, North Dakota, we said we'd try and be ready for August. You know, we have you know, made some revisions in terms of expanding the size of the facility because of the protein, fiber, and starch initiative. Mm-hmm. So we may be 30 to, you know, estimate is 30 to 45 days, you know, later than maybe what we anticipated first. But of course, Max, everything is related to the weather in this spring and summer. We have an early spring. That's a good news sign for our construction.
Okay, got it. Great. Thank you.
The next question comes from Arash Yazdani of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Yes, Arash.
Hi, guys.
Go ahead.
Hi. Just I wanted to get a little bit of understanding on the processing at origination versus destination. Are you finding, given the current conditions, you guys are competing more with the processors that are at your destinations? And how's that playing out?
I would make a couple of comments on that. I think first thing is we are undeterred from our strategy of processing at the origin of the raw material. We continue to believe that the quality-conscious, high-value markets of the world, you know, are demanding, you know, product directly from Canada, from Australia, from the U.S. And the success of our processing operations there, you know, show that. At the same time, we're not ignoring the opportunities that exist. I mean, if you look, our strategy in Canada, U.S., Australia, and Turkey is a model in which, you know, we foreshadow in our disclosures here that, you know, we're looking at India very seriously on the same type of model where you can have a balance of local processing and distribution, which is augmented by the origin-based processing. So we don't see an increase, you know, in that type of activity, you know, putting to threat anything on the AGT strategy. In fact, if we look at the bulk conventional sales of lentils, you know, this year over last, they're down. They're not up. And if we look at the bulk conventional shipments of lentils year over year, we accounted for about 20% of the bulk shipments in vessel this year, whereas last year we accounted for none. So we don't see a fundamental shift in the value-added, high-value commodities like the chickpeas, the lentils, the split peas, the split faba beans, the broad beans, the things that we concentrate on, you know, that will continue to be a containerized game, and that continues to play into our strength and advantage. The other thing is with origin-based versus destination-based processing, you have freight that plays really a big key role, and we're seeing bulk freights, you know, depending on the destination, are getting tighter on the handy size and the smaller size vessels, which again bodes well for containerized shipments. Arash, when you look at the liquidity and working capital issues we see in the emerging markets, you know, that is also a significant deterrent for, you know, bulk versus, you know, containerized, because, you know, people in destination are looking to minimize their price risk. They're buying hand to mouth and they have liquidity issues. They would rather buy 20 or 40 containers than buy 5,000 tons at a time.
No, that's great. Okay, and then the other, just on a more strategic side, I just quickly wanted to see, are you guys looking at bulking up in any of your current regions? Any specific segments of your business you're looking at augmenting? Can you give us some color on that? Thanks.
Raj, we've already announced the construction of a North American, or, you know, an expansion of a North American pasta asset. The food ingredients platform with the Minot, North Dakota plant, we will put that into commission, and we will be looking at expansion of that platform as we grow out the North American and Western European customer base for those products. And, you know, we see those areas as being an opportunity for us, you know, to augment. So when I look at our plate today, we have the Chinese bean plant that's, you know, under construction. We have the North Dakota plant under construction, a Canadian plant planned, and we have Indian entry, you know, as a priority looking forward. So we've got a full plate to continue to solidify that global footprint.
Okay, great. Thanks, guys.
Next, we have a follow-up question from Anup Prahar of GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
In your earlier comments, Murad, when you were talking about increasing utilization, I think you made some comments in the context of mustard and canary, and I was wondering, could you expand on that a little bit? Because, I mean, those aren't really a big part of your business. So how does it really
actually, Anup, it was flax and canary, I think, were the two that we mentioned. You know, the flax program is an interesting one because, you know, we have a number of different opportunities in flax seed where we look at, you know, the higher value flax markets into the, you know, bakery ingredient markets in Western Europe. We have the industrial uses of flax in the Chinese market, you know, as an opportunity that goes along well with our Chinese development strategy. And then we have our normal Middle Eastern and North African buyers that consume flax regularly. So we like that program as compared to, let's say, just putting our focus on the filler business, on our utilization, in the hands of just bulk yellow peas. Because bulk yellow peas, you know, are a much tougher commodity for us to extract an acceptable margin than, let's say, the flax business, the canary seed business, and those. So on the canary side, a lot more focus being put on Mexico and South America. And, you know, if I look at a target of market development, you know, for us in the 2012-2013, I would definitely say that strengthening of our Americas business is going to continue to consume a lot of the effort of Gaetan's group to continue that solidification. So that fits into the Canary platform as well, quite well.
Okay. And just while I have you on the line, I mean, the volatility quarter in, quarter out for the last little while has been fairly dramatic. So looking forward, as the business improves, what kind of sustainability over what period of time increasing in EBITDA would you need to see before you would contemplate increasing the dividend?
You know what? In our perspective, I mean, we've been very, very clear that when this business returns to normalize the earnings, you know, we say quite openly, the advantage of this business is it's a high fixed cost component business. That's also the disadvantage of this business is that we're a high fixed cost component business. So when we encounter economic headwinds like we have, you know, earnings can suffer as a result. When we get back to generating our cash flow, you know, in the second half of 2012-2013, Anup, we've been clear on our desire to deploy free cash flow into a combination of expansion and tweaking of our global activities, but also we'll be looking at the possibility of increasing our yield. We believe that a balance in yield and growth is what our investors are looking for. And when I look at that particular growth side, you know, we have a significant amount of growth just from deploying, you know, initiatives to diversify our utilization activities. So, you know, when we have comments about, you know, I hear comments about, you know, Alliance is a serial acquisitor. And I think that people that have that view aren't really looking into seeing how each acquisition or growth piece, you know, you look at the strategy and it'll have two or three links into the strategy. You know, giving you an example, South African acquisition, you know, came out, was foreshadowed a few quarters before we bought it. Well, South Africa is Southern Africa, you know, in terms of a market for our products. Southern Africa is a major market for pasta. Southern Africa is an origination region for the Indian subcontinent strategy. Mozambique, Tanzania, Malawi, Kenya, Zambia, Zimbabwe. South Africa is also one of the largest markets in the world for light speckled kidney beans, which fits into our Chinese expansion strategy. So you look, every one of these things, we're not acquiring EBITDA. We're building a global footprint that's linked together. When we deliver those, we'll be looking at the possibility of increasing dividends as well.
But I'm not sure you really still answered my question. What I'm really trying to understand is that the volatility quarter in, quarter out, I mean, that's going to be an ongoing inherent part of the business, whether the volatility is on the upside or the downside. As we expect the business to return to stronger footings in the second half of the year, how many quarters of sustained growth do you think, or give us a sense as to how many quarters of sustained growth do you need before you would contemplate something like increasing the dividend?
Yeah, Anoop, I can't. I mean, that, the dividend policy is a board issue. It's not just my view entirely. So, you know, I can tell you that what I've answered is to say that, you know, the board and management advocate a balance of growth, you know, in terms of deploying free cash flow and also looking at increasing yield. So I can't really give you a commitment on what kind of number of quarters.
The next question comes from Keith Carpenter of Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I just had a couple of income statement questions. You guys say here in your outlook on the go forward for the marketing, sales, distribution expenses that you're looking to get this down to $7 million going forward. Is that a Q1 comment or is that a as we go through 2012 comment?
Yeah, I mean, Keith, listen, the bottom line on that was, you know, we had one time what we deemed to be non-recurring advertising expenses. Every 3 to 4 years, we do a national brand awareness campaign in Turkey related to our Arbella pasta. And the last campaign was 2000, end of 7, 2008, prior to the acquisition of Arbella. So the family had undertaken that campaign back in, I think it was early 2008. And so that campaign was largely executed in the end of 2011. And so won't be refocused again until 2013 and to 2014 start. So when we subtract about half of those advertising costs, we didn't even subtract at all, we foreshadow to say that a normalized level will be around $7 million.
Okay, perfect. So I get the sense that that's something very near term. On the G&A, similar question, you guys definitely talked about earlier about getting that or optimizing those costs. Is that something as a work in progress through 2012?
Yeah, that would be a work in progress. We have a number of initiatives going on, and I don't think we'll see them all recognized in Q1.
Okay, but
no,
we'll see those.
Listen, we're looking at you know, we've acquired so many companies and so many, you know, activities over the last 36 months that, you know, part of our focus as management is, you know, as I said, capacity utilization is one big initiative. Diversification of our markets is another, but the third has to be optimization of our corporate administration and optimization of our global fixed cost component of our business. And so, you know, we're looking at, you know, initiatives for standardization, you know, elimination of decentralized functions, centralization, if it's more advantageous for us to do that. Those are the kind of things that you'll see throughout 2012. But, the, you know, these are certainly things that are already in progress and they're being worked on.
Perfect. Thanks.
Next, we have a follow-up question from Christine Healy of Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Hi, guys. maybe this question's for Lori. Lori, can you give us an idea as to your CapEx budget for the year and then just confirm what your intentions are on how you will fund that?
Well, I guess we have a couple of possible things upcoming. As we both alluded to earlier, we have been speaking about global credit facilities, which will fund some of the CapEx we have coming up.
I mean, I think, Christine, we've been quite clear that we have the PASTA project upcoming.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we announced a budget of about $50 million for that. That would be a two-year construction cycle, so 2012, 2013.
Okay.
So if we look at that along with our Minot expansions, we're probably looking at a CapEx budget estimate of around $35 to $40 million in 2012. So we'll be funding that with some long-term debt and some free cash flow.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And that brings us to the end of our questions in this session. I'd like to thank you all for joining us on the call today. I'd also like to remind everyone that's still on the call that if you have any follow-up questions, you can feel free to contact us at our Regina head office, and we'd be more than happy to follow up with you. Again, thanks for attending our conference call, and I wish you all a good day.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. You may disconnect your lines. Thank you for participating and have a pleasant day.